Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators, a podcast for translators by translators, bringing you simple strategies to build better habits. In each episode, we'll focus on specific habits for translators in various stages of their careers. If you're a translator who enjoys learning about habits to improve your business and lifestyle, then this is the podcast for you. We're your hosts, Madalena Sanchez-Zampalo
and Veronica De Michelis. Like you, we are professional freelance translators trying to balance the challenges that come with building a career and maintaining clarity and boundaries between work and personal life. We hope you'll join us in this conversation about smart habits and discover some simple strategies you can apply today to help you build your career and achieve the lifestyle you desire.
Hello and welcome to Smart Habits for Translators. This is episode 52 and it marks the second anniversary of our podcast. It's hard to believe that it's been 2 years since we launched Smart Habits for Translators. More than ever, we're grateful to you all, our listeners and colleagues, and it makes us so happy to hear that you enjoy our episodes. Every time you send us an email, a social media message, direct message or anything, and you comment on any of our episodes or our social media posts, it helps us to know that you are enjoying the podcast, and sharing it with other colleagues is the highest compliment you can give us. So we are excited to share that we have listeners in over 100 countries at this point, and more than 50 episodes in, and we still feel like we have so many ideas. So thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so much for your support and for sharing our podcast with others. We spend countless hours working on the podcast and coming up with new topics and ideas to share with you, inviting speakers or guests, I should say, and recording and just, you know, doing everything else we're doing online when it comes to the podcast. So it really means a lot that you find our work helpful. Before we start, we wanted to share with you how our first ever Smart Habits for Translators virtual business retreat went. As you may have heard in our previous episodes, we held our first virtual business retreat with some of you, our amazing colleagues and listeners, on September 28th. We spent 3 hours together and we reviewed and brainstormed various ideas, challenges, and aspirations that we all have for our businesses, and it was such a rewarding experience. We had a very international group and worked on our business goals for the last quarter of 2021, all together and in smaller groups. And Madalena and I acted as facilitators, participated in group discussions to the extent possible, and developed a workbook that will hopefully serve our retreat participants throughout this last quarter and in the future.
Right. It was such a good time. And I felt like there was so much energy flowing during and after that session together that we said, we've got to keep doing this. So we felt so inspired and energized by it that we decided to organize one every quarter going forward. Many of our colleagues who attended the first retreat said that they'd like to join us again. And we also have a long waiting list of people who couldn't get in for the first one, but would also like to join us for a future retreat. So we've already set the dates for the virtual business retreats for the next year. And our next one is coming up on December 16th. So registration is open now, but space is limited. We already have about half of the seats filled for this next retreat. So we want to let you know about it, and we want this experience to be interactive. So just so you know, we're limiting it to 20 people. So go ahead and head to www.smarthabitsfortranslators.com/retreat to book your spot.
Yes, we were so inspired doing this retreat together with colleagues, and we really look forward to hosting these virtual business retreats regularly going forward. They're a really great way to get inspired by colleagues, realize that you're not alone if you're struggling with certain aspects of your business, and it can be so helpful to get advice from others who understand. And another amazing thing that came out of our first Smart Habits for Translators virtual business retreat is that we created a LinkedIn group for our retreat participants, where they can connect and keep the conversation going after the retreat or in between the retreats, keep each other accountable, ask questions, and get answers. So this upcoming retreat on December 16th is your chance to start making a plan for the next 90 days, the first quarter of 2022. Whatever aspirations you might have next year, we suggest you tackle them one quarter at a time. And we think that doing a business audit and setting clear, measurable goals is more likely to happen when you set aside time for this, especially together with a supportive group of colleagues and us. All right, let's get back to the topic for today's episode. Last year, we celebrated our first podcast anniversary by recording an Ask Us Anything episode. So we're making it a tradition by doing the same thing this year. We have been gathering questions from our listeners for a while, and we want to thank those of you who wrote to us by email, through our website, and on social media, and submitted your questions. There were so many of them that we had to group them in several categories to make sure that we get to as many of them as we can, and we're still going to have to be brief. So here we go. First question. What advice would you give to a beginner translator starting their online business? For example, how do I pick a name for my business and find my first clients? There's a lot to unpack here. So
right.
I'll start with a name for your business. I would say pick a name that makes sense to you and to your clients. I personally think it's okay to go with your actual name or something that reflects your business. Your values, maybe, your specialization, and the type of services you provide. So don't feel like you're, especially if you're a freelancer, don't feel like you can't just pick a name for your business that represents your actual name or, you know, part of your name. Get a few ideas down on paper. And then I would say ask some people you know, your friends, your family, maybe some colleagues, ask around what they think. What do they think of when they hear this name or the names you came up with? Because they may give you some helpful feedback or maybe ideas that you can use to tweak your business name before you sort of set it in stone. And you can also change it down the road. Like I have several examples of colleagues who, you know, after several, say 10 years of running their business, rebranded and picked a different business name. So don't think of it as something that, you know, you're going to live with for the rest of your career. And be careful with acronyms because they may mean different things in different languages or different cultures. And then the online business part of the question, how do you start your online business? Even though some people are sort of, they feel scared of thinking about getting a website, they don't know how to get started. I still think it's important to get even the simplest website and also a professional looking email domain, as well as a LinkedIn profile. So I would say these three would be the basics starting out. I think the professional looking email is something many people underestimate.
Yes.
Even among colleagues, it just gives a more professional impression and helps build trust when your email address shows that you treat it as a business and not a hobby or, you know, kind of side gig. Also, if local clients are important to you, not necessarily individual clients, but, you know, local businesses, get a Google My Business profile. It's free and it's very easy to set up, but do set it up as completely as you can. So that will help clients find you online. Create a professional resume and research agencies that work with languages and fields you're interested in and apply to those that are hiring. Don't stop after like applying to two places or five places. Sometimes you need to apply to 50 or even 100 to get a response from a few, but they may be your first agency clients that you will work with for many years. And finding clients as a beginner, I would say the easiest way to do that would be to start working with reputable agencies that so that you can learn, you know, and get skills and realize what it's like working with actual clients, and then join a professional association and start building your network. And as you establish relationships and trust with your colleagues and you become known as someone who works in a particular field, you will often be referred to clients. So those would be my tips. What about you, Madalena?
Those are great tips. And I would agree with all of those things. I would actually even add to a couple of them. So I think for sure, like you said, even a simple website, whether it's maybe just a landing page to start with, because you can do that even very simply on a lot of different platforms. But what you said about setting up your own domain name with either your, you know, your businessname.com or your own name.com is very important. And a lot of people overlook this. I know a lot of people use like Gmail or Hotmail and things. And I'm thinking sometimes like, this just doesn't look professional if you're providing professional services. And I realize some people don't care about that a whole lot, but I see that and I'm like, really? You know, you've been practicing for how many years? Just go ahead and pay the, what is it, $20 a year for that, and you own it. And seems like a small thing, but it does have a certain level of professionalism to it. I would also add to set up a LinkedIn profile, even if it's just basic to start with. You know, make sure that you use keywords in your headline, which is basically the description right underneath your name. And also make sure that you fill out the about section really well, but not just about yourself, but about what you do and who you serve. Speaking directly to the client in that about section. Fill it out as well as you possibly can. And also the skills section is really important because that's one way that people find you on LinkedIn. I agree with you 100% about, what do you call it? The Google My Business. Yeah, Google My Business. I completely agree with you about that. Set that page up. It's free. It doesn't take very long to do, and just keep it updated. And something else that's really important is to talk to colleagues. A lot of people don't even know where to start looking for clients, like agency clients, even when they start. Maybe you want to talk to colleagues in language pairs other than your own, so you can, you know, get honest answers from them about, you know, like what agencies they think are the best to work with. Because sometimes when you talk to a colleague who works in your same language pair, they may feel funny about that. I don't know. I personally am open to telling people the people I work with because I don't feel like somebody's out to take my clients from me, you know. But I know that some people do feel that way, so it might be good to look at colleagues who work in other language pairs. And also, form a professional network. It's one of the best things you can do when you're starting out because you need others to support you, and you're not meant to go this journey alone, as they say. I think it's important to build your professional network as early as you can. So yeah, those are my tips. And one last thing about the business name I would say is don't overlook maybe using your own name as your business name. I know a lot of people do that, even if they have a complicated name. You know, you are the face of your business, so consider using your own name, and there's nothing wrong with that. Okay, so the next question is, how do I kickstart my online presence, and how do I create a website with very little experience under my belt? Okay, so we sort of started talking about this already. To kickstart your online presence, we've already covered a few things. You do want to have a website in place, even if it's basic to start with. You can always update it and, you know, make it more beautiful and wonderful later, but definitely get a website set up and make it so that you're speaking to your client. Always in your online presence, you should be speaking to your ideal clients through anything you write, whether it's on your LinkedIn profile, your website, or anywhere else. That's, you know, a key to your online presence. And the LinkedIn profile is also really important. People are looking to LinkedIn as a platform to find professionals who can help them. It is a social media network for professionals. That's why people are there. They're there to do business. So I would say that's a great way to do that. I don't want to plug my courses, but I have courses about these things for anybody who's interested, and lots of blog posts I could share about this. So I think that, you know, I could spend multiple episodes talking about this, but if you really want to kickstart your online presence, those are the two first things I would suggest doing. And then also, if you belong to a professional association, make sure that you're listed in their directory so that clients can find you there, because a lot of clients do look to professional associations to find translators and interpreters. So make sure that you have a great profile there as well. What do you think about that one?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. And I also think many people join a professional association and forget to fill out their profile.
I know.
So they feel like, I'm a member, you know, and why are clients not finding me? And then they realize sometimes a while later that their profile is blank, or, you know, maybe there's, depending on how the website is set up of the association as well, sometimes there's an option to like make your profile private so that it's only the members who see it and not the clients. So really, you know, keep that in mind and make sure your profile is filled out the way you think clients would like to, you know, see it. So put the relevant information there. And for the online presence and the website part, I think, again, many, and I was the same way when I was starting out and I was working on my first website as a freelance translator. Don't confuse your website with your CV. It's a different thing. It's even if you don't have a lot of experience under your belt, it doesn't mean that you're going to have to list like all of your education and all of the projects you worked on your website. Your website is client oriented. People have a limited time to read it and make up their mind if you're the right person for them. So there should be there shouldn't be a lot of words on your, I mean, there should be the words on your website should be the important ones.
Yeah. Not your whole bio.
No, not like your whole life story and, you know, what you did. It doesn't have to be fancy and complicated, especially in the beginning. Just highlight what you bring to the table. What can you offer? You know, and if, as you're working on your specializations, it might be your fields of interest or projects you have worked on, even if there are limited number of those projects, and create a professional impression. Again, like small details that matter, like the images on your website, the phrasing, email address. These small details matter, and they help to establish a sense of trust for potential clients. And if you're still learning, you know, whether you're a student or a graduate, or you're just getting started and you're just learning about certain fields, you can use that experience, the learning experience, to, you know, use it in your online presence. You can write about it. You can write blog posts. You can write LinkedIn posts about the things you're learning and what exactly have you learned from that and how will you use it in your future work. You can offer to write articles for your association newsletters. I know usually associations are always after, you know, new contributors and authors. So that will be helpful as well. So the next question is, what do you think a freelance translator should aim to achieve in their first year? I would say don't burn out. Just kidding. But seriously, like don't try to achieve everything. Like don't try to achieve the impossible. Make a list of the things that you would like to achieve and then break them down and then accept that you're not going to achieve all of them in your first year. I would say if you, even within your first year, if you manage to create a good looking CV, create a professional looking email address, email signature, online presence that we talked about before, that will be a great start. I also think within your first year, you should have a clearer idea, not a super clear idea, but a better idea of what you like and dislike working on, what kind of projects, what kind of fields are you good at, not so good at, a better idea of your ideal clients, and a professional development plan, because you will, within that first year, as you know, also the years after, you will start realizing what are some things you need to work on and areas of expertise to develop. So put that in writing, you know, whether it's a paper plan or like an electronic format, work on your professional development plan and put in some things that you would like to learn more about, skills you would like to develop, put some timeline there and keep yourself accountable that way, and start building your network with colleagues. Join an association, start meeting people, whether it's in person or online, start contributing in any way possible. I think it's one of the best ways to get started as a beginner and also build your network is to start volunteering in a professional association, because you're showing that this is not just a gig. It's your passion. It's something you're willing to contribute to. You're bringing something to the table and people appreciate that. That's how you create trust and good relationships. What do you think?
Yeah. And that does sound like a lot to do in the first year.
Yeah.
But I think the point is to try to achieve it by the end of the first year, you know, because at the beginning, you're probably thinking like, oh, I should just accept anything that's sent my way. I need the experience. I need this. I need that. And yes, you don't want to be incredibly selective at the very beginning, but you should also talk to people about what are acceptable rates in your language pairs. You know, talk to some trusted colleagues about that. Maybe find a mentor. But those are some things that by the end of the year, you should try to put into place because they will be important to you going forward, especially the professional development plan. I would say aim to try to pinpoint a specialization that you really want to work in, an area or two that you feel really strongly, you know, skill-wise that you can carry on with and will be happy with for many years to come. Knowing that you can develop more or you can change. Just remember, it's not set in stone. I think that's something that you should think about the first year for sure. Yeah. Okay, so our next question is, I feel a bit scattered and overwhelmed with all the things I should be doing as a new freelance translator. Marketing, learning how to use tools, writing my blog. How do I prioritize and find time for each activity? So that's a good question based on the last one, where we gave a lot of tips. So yeah, it can be overwhelming at first, and you can feel scattered and everything feels important, so you don't know how to prioritize each thing. And I would say try to prioritize first the activities that will bring you to paid work quickly, right? So quickly meaning, you know, that's relative, but try to get paid work first before you start writing a blog, for example. Yeah. Okay. A lot of people think, well, if I write a blog, I'll just start getting all these clients. No, a blog is a long-term game, right? It is something that brings you clients over time, and takes a long time to get, you know, fully established. But it is worth doing, maybe not right off the bat, though. Learning how to use tools, that's something you should prioritize early on to make sure that you are more efficient in your work. That way that you can take on more paid work, right? That's what the goal is to make a living, and to be happy with what you're doing. So if you feel like you're slogging through everything and there's a tool out there that could help you to do something better or faster, more efficiently, make sure that you prioritize learning that tool. Marketing, I would say, is number one. And that's interesting because, you know, when you're starting out, you might not have a lot of confidence about marketing your business. You might think, well, who am I to start marketing myself? I'm so new. But how else are you going to get clients if you don't tell people what you do? Right. So I think that's definitely where you should prioritize your time and anything else. Passion project wise, for example, it should wait. Like, I think I've said this a few times, but I waited to write the blog that I wanted to write for my colleagues. I waited almost 10 years to write it, right? I wanted to make sure I was established before I did that because I knew that I needed to think about my clients first, not just, you know, entertaining my colleagues, for example. Not that I'm entertaining anybody, but, you know, it was a sort of a passion project of mine. I don't make money writing my blog. So I think it's important to prioritize the things that will help you create the business you want for the future. So I said this, I think, in an interview recently. I think it was on The Deliberate Freelancer, and I said, do something today that tomorrow you will thank you for, something like that, right? Do something today that will set you up for success tomorrow. Yeah. So that's maybe the way to think about it when you can't figure out what to prioritize. It's like, what small thing can you do today that you'll be grateful tomorrow that you did because it sets you up for the next step forward. Yeah. What about you? What do you think about the prioritization and feeling of overwhelm? Well,
it's not just in the first years of your freelancer year. That's a problem.
That's true.
Many of us do.
Good point.
But I also realized we need to link to your interview on the Deliberate Freelancer podcast. So we'll do that in the show notes.
Oh, sure.
Yes, I agree with you. So I would say, think about what is the goal for your business? What is why are you in this? For most people, the financial part takes priority. So focus on that. So, you know, do what would bring you closer to your financial goals. And then think, you know, if you're really like scattered and you're like, okay, I feel good about the amount of work I have and the rates and all that, what, you know, it's all the other things that make me stressed too. So pick one thing, like what is one thing that will make you feel more at peace at this moment and bring you closer to your business goals? Focus on that. And when you complete it, you will feel better and you will be better equipped to handle the other things. But again, one at a time. And then I would say, don't try to schedule too many different things on the same day because that also contributes to the feeling of being scattered. Allocate a day a week when you focus on a particular activity for like a, you know, chunk at a time for like 20, 30 minutes. For example, Mondays are for marketing, or, you know, Wednesdays are for writing, Fridays are for professional development. And like you allocate that half an hour or whatever to do that activity. And don't try to multitask. So like working on your CV as you're watching your webinar or writing an article, that's not going to work out very well in the long term.
Right.
So the next question is right up our alley. Do you have any advice on being a freelance translator and a parent, and how to succeed at both? The $1 million question.
It's up your alley, honestly. I feel like you do this with such grace, and I'm like, no. Just slug it along.
Oh, goodness. No. Well, I think I try to keep, even on the hardest days, I try to find humor in situations whenever I can. Sometimes it's hard. You know, beyond trying to stay positive, I would say prioritize rest, because if you want to have energy left for your work, you can't do that. You can't be creative. You can't catch your own mistakes or other people's mistakes if you're editing. You can't do that if you are tired. So prioritize your rest first and your energy levels. Work on small goals. And sometimes, even for me, if, say, my kids are sick or I have a big deadline and my kids are home, sometimes it may mean one thing a day. Like I will ask myself, what is one thing I want to achieve today? And when you have a little baby, sometimes that one thing may just be, you know, take a shower. That's okay. You know, just accept that it's just the reality in that moment, and it's not going to last forever. And with that in mind, I think it's important to surround yourself with people that don't bring you down, don't make you feel inadequate or you're not doing it all, and, you know, just contribute to that feeling of guilt. But surround yourself with people that lift you up, both your, you know, immediate network or community, like of real life friends and colleagues and family, and also anything you consume, like online or in the media. If it makes you feel bad, don't read that. Don't follow it. Just focus on what, you know, is important to you and what is your reality like. And accept that sometimes your focus will shift. There is really no balance, I think, in parenting freelancing. It's always, you know, one thing or the other. You always have to, choose what to focus on. So, and that's what we mean with Madalena when we talk about clarity on this podcast too. Like you're clear with yourself what is the priority at this moment. Sometimes it's being with a sick child or doing something with your child, and sometimes it's a work deadline. I think the doing that, resting, accepting that it's not going to be this picture perfect situation, and having people around you who support you and who can make you laugh and who will listen to you when you need to vent, that will really be helpful to sort of juggle it all. What do you think, Madalena?
Yes, I agree with all of that. I also think it's important to remember that the clarity is sometimes, even though, you know, we talk about work-life clarity, sometimes the clarity is not what you had planned. Truly, I mean, clarity doesn't mean you're excited about what the clarity is sometimes, right? So sometimes you might be excited, you got this huge project, and then all of a sudden you got to go pick up your kid from school because they're sick, right? It is what it is. And you can be very upset in the moment, but it's not going to change that situation. So I think you've talked about before here, building in some cushion into your deadlines as well as possible for the unexpected, because that's just a reality of being a parent who has small children, right? Or a parent, I guess, in general. So I would say, you know, it's okay to not do everything at the pace that everybody else is, and not to compare yourself to other people, especially other people who don't have the same life experiences that you have right now. It's really easy to do that, right? You see your colleagues doing different things, maybe, or other people maybe that you follow, and you're like, why am I not there yet, or something like that, right? Your story is different. It's not everybody else's. And their story is different. And of course, you have to remember, it's sort of like what you were saying here, but people are sharing the highlight reels, right, on these different platforms. So if you are following people and you're comparing yourself to anybody, remember that. Like, nobody's really sharing the hard stuff. I mean, sometimes they do, but it's nobody wants any more negativity in their life, right? Yeah. So they want to share the good stuff. And so remember that there are some hard times and moments, but it does get better. And just be honest with yourself and how much you can take on. And if it's not a lot right now, it's not a lot. But in the future, yeah. It will be more. Yeah. And on this, in the same vein of what you said about rest, I would say prioritizing yourself in general. You know, it's unfortunate because there's such a thing that a lot of us have to unlearn, which is that, you know, we should do for others first and this and that. But honestly, you can't do it if you're not taking care of yourself. And I know I've learned that the hard way a few times. So I think that's really important to prioritize yourself, not only with rest, but with good nutrition, drinking enough water, healthy movement, taking care of your mind, meaning like not just working all the time, but doing other things that stimulate your mind that you enjoy. So it's hard. It seems like a lot, I know. But I think one thing that I always remember is that it's not very helpful when colleagues or friends tell you like, oh, just wait, you know, one day you'll miss these things, or, you know, one day they'll be older and they won't want to be around you anymore. And it's kind of like, yeah. That's not helpful. That was never helpful in the history of all time, right? But people say these things and it's like, that's really not a helpful thing to tell somebody who's trying to be a freelancer and a parent at the same time and do well at both, right? So I think the best thing you can do is to find a support system of people who understand you. And you have, Veronica, you want to talk about the Facebook group you have?
Right. Yeah. So I forgot to mention that. And there's another thing I forgot to mention.
Go ahead.
So we have a Facebook group that is called Translating Mamas. So we have a wonderful community there and we welcome new members. So if you're interested in that, I'll add the link in the show notes where you can reach out to us and we'll share the link with you. We always welcome new members and that it's just helpful to share some of these things sometimes and ask for advice and just get some support.
Yeah. And there's mothers there, by the way, that have children of all ages. It's not just small children. So
exactly. Yes. Yeah. All ages. And another thing I forgot to mention is, you know, that's another reason why thinking of potential partnerships or collaborations with colleagues would be helpful. I'm in a collective, translator collective with a couple of colleagues. And then I have a couple of long-term projects I work on where there are several colleagues who, you know, I know and trust. And it's just helpful because if something came up, if there's an emergency and you can't complete a project you said yes to, or you need to change it from, say, you being the translator to being a proofreader, or you just need help working on a transcreation project, at least you have a few colleagues who you trust, you've worked with, you know the quality of their work. You're not simply, you know, turning down work, but you maybe are taking on a different role. And we just trade favors in the sense, you know, if one day I have to ask for help, then I know someone who will help me out next time they need help, I'll be willing to help them too. Mm-hmm. So it's just, and I know there are other examples of translator collectives where, young mothers or mothers with several kids, sometimes it's hard, not just for moms, for dads too. So if you're a translator and you have kids, I would say try to find a colleague or a couple of colleagues you can create, even an informal collective with, that you can work on projects together.
Okay, well, that kind of goes into the next question as well, which is, how do I find my community online and connect with colleagues? So you've mentioned a couple of ways to do that with fellow translators and parents. But another way I would say, whether you're parents or not in general, is to look for groups that have people with sort of like-minded goals, like they're like-minded professionals. So obviously we talk here a lot about professional associations and we tell, you know, the ones that we belong to, but I think that that's a really easy way to find connection with colleagues. It's just that that's where they're hanging out, right? So professional associations often have events going on virtually and in person, and that's a great way to meet colleagues. It's where I've met some of the best colleagues I know, honestly, is through professional association. We belong to the American Translators Association together, but also I've met colleagues even in other fields and other associations I belong to, and they're also great colleagues of mine, or even some of them are clients in these other associations. So you can find community online in a lot of ways. One most that's most obvious or top of mind for me is that when we came together with the people who attended our virtual business retreat, several of them said, hey, we want to stay connected to each other and be each other's accountability partners or follow up with each other. We have the same goals, whatever. So we ended up creating a private LinkedIn group for the people who attended our retreat so that they could stay connected and follow up with each other and stay in touch about how they're doing with their goals and things like that. So there are a lot of different ways, I would say, start talking to others about, you know, maybe events coming up and just see if you can get somebody to go with you, even if you feel uncomfortable going by yourself, you know, virtually or in person. And try to find local groups if you can. I know that was always a problem for me in some of the places I've lived. So I looked outside of where I lived, and that's when I found a national association. And I mean, I've been plugged in ever since. Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. I would also say professional associations, local, national. There are many, many translators and interpreters on LinkedIn and Twitter. There are some Facebook groups, if Facebook's your jam. But I would say follow the conversation there on these channels and chime in when you have something to say. Don't hesitate to reach out to colleagues who do work that you find interesting or that you want to learn more about. Or if a colleague wrote something or, you know, did something that you liked, or just a person who inspires you or someone you look up to, if you have a question, or just let them know. It's always nice to receive like not just a connection request, but some kind of personalized note with it. So be yourself. If you're using LinkedIn and trying to connect with new people, always include a note with your LinkedIn request so that, you know, it's easier to see that you're not just there after expanding your network, but you're actually, you know, are genuinely interested in learning more about that person and connecting. So those would be my tips. And the next question is, what are your favorite CAT tools, personal preference, and CRM tools? And how do you suggest choosing which tools to invest in? So personally, I work with several tools. I work with MemoQ, Trados, SmartCat, and MemSource, most of all. My favorite among them are probably SmartCat and MemSource, but I'm honestly not opposed to working with any of these or even a new tool. I find that any translation environment tool is really just that. It's a tool. It's a means to an end. It's a way to boost my productivity, make sure that, you know, that translation is consistent, that I manage terminology in a good way. So I am eager to learn, and I always try to think, okay, how do I make it work for me? And does it work with my client's needs? Does it work with the type of translation I'm, you know, trying to produce? When it comes to CRM, I have tried, so that person who sent a question about the CRM mentioned a couple of examples, including HoneyBook. I tried HoneyBook and it just seemed like too much for me. I tried it for a year and I felt like I'm not really using it to its full potential. So I'm not using any like special tool for these purposes. I just use Asana to keep track of my clients and projects and, you know, any outstanding invoices, or if there's a client I haven't heard from in a while, I just have all that information there and it works for me. I find that sometimes, you know, whatever works for you is fine, even if it's an Excel spreadsheet. What do you think, Madalena?
Yeah, so as far as CAT tools go, I like MemoQ quite a bit, and also, yeah, MemSource is also wonderful. It really does depend on what the client, if they require you to use a certain one. I've used many different ones, Trados, WordFast, MemoQ, MemSource, right? There are a lot out there. But I would say try to pick maybe two that you think you can do most of your work in, and try to lean into those as much as possible. If the client doesn't have a preference, then you get to choose, right? But yeah, I would say those are great, and they all have positives and negatives about them, I think. Yeah. So I can't really say that I think one is spectacular. There's always something that we like or dislike about each tool. As far as CRM goes, I do use HoneyBook, and I know that it's not that intuitive at the beginning for a lot of people because it wasn't made for translators, and I've talked to the developers about that. I'm actually a HoneyBook educator, but I haven't educated about it in a while. But I do have a blog post or two about it, so maybe we can link to those if somebody's interested in HoneyBook. I love it because I can get paid through HoneyBook, I can invoice through HoneyBook, I can send quotes and proposals through there, I can send brochures, I can send lots of different information to people, and I can also see when they've opened my correspondence, like right when anything, even a document, when they viewed a proposal or signed a contract. So I like it for that reason, but I know that other people talk about, what's the one that people talk about? LSP Expert, a lot of people like as well. I haven't used that one. I looked into it, but I haven't used that. But people who use it seem to love it, so that might be worth checking out. And I also use Asana. I could talk about Asana for days, but I know it's not for everybody, but it is, you know, if you know how to set it up properly, it does take a little bit of work at the beginning to set up. It is a high functioning machine, and I use the free version. So honestly, it's there's no overhead there, and it does quite a bit, and it works well across devices. And it works well actually across other apps. You can integrate with Asana a good bit with other apps. So I love it. And it's a great way to stay organized. But I did work for several years with an Excel sheet, and it was just fine with me. The key is to remember to update your Excel sheet and to remember to invoice, you know, so you got to set some kind of reminder for yourself because you can't do that in an Excel sheet. You've got to have something to cue you to do those things if you're not going to do it right when you deliver. Yeah. But definitely it's worth looking into a CRM tool, especially just to follow up with clients, because it's very easy to send off an email or a quote to a client and then just forget about it if they never answered you, right? You need to follow up, so that's important. There is another tool that you can integrate into Google, either Gmail or Google Workspace, which used to be called G Suite, email for business, and that is called Streak. And there's a CRM component to that as well. So Streak, Streak. It's worth checking out as well, I think. Yeah. So yeah, we named a lot of tools there. Yeah. So let's see. The next question is, could you please share your nerdy moments in everyday life? For instance, interpreting along with the movie you're watching and finding an error in the subtitles. So I don't know. I never thought about this as nerdy moments, but I guess it kind of is. I think of it as a word person thing. I often find mistakes in signage. Like there's this one down the street from us that ever since the pandemic, so it's still there, like it's still out there. And they opened outdoor seating, and I live in Southern California, so you can basically eat outside the entire year. So it's been out there forever, and it says outdoor dining around the corner, kind of, you know, thing. I don't know if it says around the corner, but it's like outdoor dining. It has an arrow and they've hyphenated outdoor. And I'm like, that's not a hyphenated word, you know? And I'm like, somebody printed this on a sign. They paid for this. And then the printer didn't say anything or didn't care. I don't know. Anyway, those are the types of things that I notice. I often find mistakes in signage very easily and in books because I read a lot. Sometimes I'm amazed, you know, you're like, oh, this is such a great book. You know, you're so into it. And then you find a huge error and you're like, oh, you know, so, for me, those are, I guess, are the nerdy word person moments, that I can think of. What about you?
Yeah. I also never thought about it until this question came in, but I also, you know, I think if you ask my husband who sees me doing certain things, he would say, you know, these are definitely nerdy moments. Like when our kids come home with any handouts from school or if we receive emails from, say, the PTA, the Parent Teacher Association, I always find things to improve in the text. Whenever I am on a new website, I'm always curious to see what languages they have the website in, even if, and that's when my husband will be like, why are you going there? We don't need the languages. But I'm just curious. I want to see. I always have subtitles on when I watch a movie. And my kids got used to it too. It's funny because our kids grew up here in the United States. So they are fluent in English, but they're like, subtitles. And then when I listen to music, if I'm at home and we have like music playing on one of our devices. If I can, I'll turn lyrics on because I want to follow along. Mm-hmm. And if I'm reading a translated book, I will try and get the original version if I can read that language. So, you know, for the languages I can read, like English, Russian, French, Norwegian, I will always try to follow along, which significantly delays the process.
I was gonna say that is sometimes difficult. Yeah,
a lot of back and forth. But I'm always like that. The book we're reading for Eve Badeau's Global Reads Club right now is a book by a Russian author that was translated. So I have it in English and in Russian, the original in Russian. And I just can't help myself. I have to go back and forth and see, like, oh my gosh, this paragraph is so important. How did they translate it? Like, I have to know.
Right. And that gives you a deeper appreciation of it. Yeah. Mm. I love that question.
Yeah, that was a really fun one. So our last question for today, which is also a fun one. We haven't thought of that, but if you're curious, we'll cover that. Could you please touch on the process of developing a new episode? How do you divide responsibilities, choose topics? Do you ever argue over a script and who has a final say if you do? Or do you just drop it if a co-host does not support an idea? I can't remember a time we argue. I don't think we argue over scripts.
No. We don't really script either. So
No.
I mean, we have a set of questions and things, but we don't ever argue about script or most things.
Or guests.
We don't argue about these things. No.
I mean, we have disagreements and there are certain things, you know, where it would be like, hey, what about this? And the other person like, well, you know, it could work or maybe not. And like we discuss and we accept that, you know, we have different opinions sometimes. And there have been cases where one of us would bring up a topic and then we would decide to not go forward with it. But then we like return to it later on and say like, oh, now it makes more sense, you know, and it's totally fine too. So how do we develop an episode? Well, we always think of new topics. Sometimes like we get, you know, send text messages to each other or emails or like tag each other on Asana. We use Asana to manage our podcast too. Mm-hmm. And like, hey, what about this guest or this topic? Sometimes you just get this light bulb moment. And then when we decide to go forward with it, we put it on our schedule for the podcast. And we, again, in Asana, we'll distribute the tasks, if it's a guest, who is inviting the guest, or if we're just the two of us, you know, one of us will create an outline for this episode, like what are the topics we want to cover. And then we'll set the date for a recording. We'll record it. I will edit it. Madalena will look over the show notes and create an email newsletter. So I feel like we have a really good distribution of tasks. Mm-hmm. And we also both think this is our passion project. We see the value in it. We get new ideas all the time. And so we don't take it personal if one of us doesn't like the idea of another.
No. I think it's also because there's an endless pot of ideas going.
Goodness. Like, yes.
So no, and I don't think that there was part of the question said who has the final say. We never think like that. No. Like I don't think we've ever said, well, I get the final say. No. I mean, I don't think we'd be doing this if that were the case.
We wouldn't last long.
No, we would not. I think, yeah, like you said, we have a very good distribution of tasks and responsibilities for the podcast. We actually, the way we divided it up was sort of with our strengths, which I think is why it works.
Yeah.
Like I've said from the beginning, if I had to edit the audio of these episodes, we would never have a podcast. And that is still true today, 50 some episodes later. You're so good at that. And it's a strength of yours. It's not a strength of mine at all. But I mean, if I had to learn it, I could, but then, you know, I probably would not stick with it. It's like that kind of a thing. But I feel like I can develop content. So like, you know, I don't mind developing like the emails and we take turns with social media. We each do 2 weeks of posts at a time and not just the posts, but the engagement. So we switch off every 2 weeks and that has worked well for us, actually. Yeah. We sort of fell into that after we were switching off every week. And then we said, no, let's do 2 weeks at a time.
Yeah.
And that has worked really nicely. And at the same time that we switch off our podcast, social media duties, that person who's doing the social media for those 2 weeks will also handle our inbox for those 2 weeks. And so, I think it just works really well. It's sort of like a professional marriage, if you will. Like when you set up the tasks at home with your spouse at the beginning, you're like, okay, you're going to do this every day and I'm going to do that.
I know. Well, yeah, it doesn't feel chaotic. It doesn't feel overwhelming. The piece that was overwhelming for us at times was the social media part, because we both also have our own like personal social media accounts. And that's why it works well that we switch, because one of us gets a break and then the other one, you know, handles these things and then gets a break again. So it feels very manageable and fun.
So, yeah. And we also, since we've tried to plan our episodes ahead, like several at a time, like we know what the queue is, what's coming up. Mm-hmm. It helps the person who's preparing the social media posts for that 2-week period to know, okay, this is the episode that we're going to talk about in our posts that week.
Yeah.
So it's a process, but I think it's working well. I mean, there's probably always room for improvement, but I don't have a problem with it. and neither of us ever gets the final say. Yeah.
It's a democracy.
Okay, so before we wrap up, let's do a smart habit check-in. And also, I want to say thank you for those of you who sent in your questions as well. Mm-hmm. But the smart habit check-in, we haven't done in a while. So let's see what we're working on. I feel like I'm working on a few things. Right now, I think the smart habit I'm working on is pausing before I say yes to something. That is something that is very hard for me to do. I get very excited about new projects and new things and new opportunities and things that people ask me to do. And sometimes it's just not a good fit. But I've learned that saying yes right away can sometimes, you know, be like shooting yourself in the foot, because if you may have plenty else going on. So I'm working on trying to pause before I say yes and also start saying no more, because there's just so much time in the day. That's what I'm working on. What about you?
Yes, several things too, including one that you shared with me recently about building in some margin in your day, you know, and not underestimating how much time things will take, and, you know, switching between tasks and just having a moment to breathe and to not feel like it's an endless to-do list. So that's work in progress. But the one I've been working on more consistently lately is every day have some sort of movement or workout. And it's been really helpful that we agreed to be accountability buddies on that. So we send each other a text message, even just saying workout completed, or like check mark. Or if on the days I'm doing yoga, I'll send a message to our yoga group on WhatsApp with a few lovely colleagues. We're still going strong. We started it when the pandemic started, and we're still doing it. It's incredible.
That's so cool.
So huge thanks to Judy and Dagmar Jenner, who started the group.
Fun. Really cool.
And so, yeah, so it's, for me, it's that. It's every day, even 20, 30 minutes. If I have time to go for like an hour bar class, I do. But otherwise, just a quick workout or a walk outside with the kids and the dog. Is
what bar I as in B-A-R.
No, not the bar you go to drink. By to the have way. A drink. Yeah, bar.
B-A-R-R-E.
The one with the ballet bar.
Yes.
So, yeah. And by the way, we have started something new this month. We let our social media followers choose a smart habit that we can all work on together this month, so we can keep each other accountable. So for the month of October, our followers and listeners chose 20 minutes of movement every day. So we'll be posting reminders and check-ins on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn to do, you know, this activity every day. And if you'd like to join this accountability challenge and build smart habits together, make sure you follow us there. We'll have a fun hashtag to use as well. So that's really fun.
Yeah, I'm excited. We're going to try to switch it up every month.
Yeah.
We talked about the first week of the month, asking our followers and colleagues what smart habit we should work on together, letting them vote. And for October, it's 20 minutes of healthy movement a day. So that can be whatever you like, walking, running, yoga, Pilates, bar, you know, anything that makes you feel good. And so each month we'll switch it up. Mm-hmm. And that's a wrap on our Ask Us Anything episode. We really enjoyed answering your questions, and we hope you enjoyed this Q&A episode as well. Thanks again to everybody who submitted their questions, and feel free to do this at any time for our future episodes. Leave a comment on our website, email us at hello@smarthabitsfortranslators.com, or contact us through social media. And if you'd like to work on your business goals and work-life clarity goals for the first quarter of 2022 together, With us and with a friendly group of colleagues, go to smarthabitsfortranslators.com/retreat to register for our next virtual business retreat. Remember that there are limited seats available, so once it fills up, we will close registration and start a waiting list for the next one.
Yeah, we hope you join us. And as always, if you like this episode, please share it with your colleagues and friends, follow us and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. This only takes a minute, and we've recorded a quick video tutorial to show you how to do it. We'll link to that in the show notes.
Talk to you soon.
We hope you enjoyed this episode and discovered some simple strategies that you can apply today at work or at home to help you achieve the lifestyle you desire. If you did, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
If you have a topic you want us to cover, please send us a message at hello@smarthabitsfortranslators.com. If you like this episode, we'd appreciate if you'd leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. And please share the podcast with other translators you know.